afternoon, and welcome back to We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I am Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
It just feels different. I don't know.
It does. It just feels better.
There's hope in the air.
I know. No crying here. Although there has been quite a bit across the globe.
There has been a lot of crying.
And this just in, heard from a woman this week that Trump is exactly like the Nazis. He just wants to build the wall just like the Nazis when they built that wall to keep the Jews out in the 1930s.
That's right. Click, then they hang up on you. Yeah, so check your history, folks. That's what really went down.
You gotta wonder what's going on out there in public school. So, honestly, I mean, when they're hysterical, they might be hysterical about something that actually is not even true. But that was one of the better calls. I thought I'd share that from the boohooing ranges out there. Let's see. We've got our website is up and running. WeThePeopleRadio.us. I've got all of the archives up, posted, fixed, ready to go. So you've got 6 years of programming if you'd like to listen back. And our contact information's all on there if you would like to send us ideas for programs or ideas for guests, especially if you read any great books or hear somebody on the radio or see somebody interviewed on TV. Usually it's like 2 minutes. So shoot us the names. We'll see if we can get them on longer and learn more about them. And that's mostly all, eh?
I think so.
Okay.
Other than I just want to say again, I just feel like
another victory lap.
We've got a lot of hope again.
Exactly.
Yeah, things are going to change, and it's going to be exciting.
I know it. We've got some fun music for you today too. We've been working on that. Second half of the show is on the VA. We're going to speak with Kristen Rule. She's got some, you know, thoughts and updates for us on the VA. I think you guys will enjoy the memo I have for you. So stick with us for that. It's about the bonuses. I'll just like give you a little sneak preview. VA bonuses. And first hour, we have Dr. Lyle Rapacki. He is a private sector intelligence, behavioral analysis, and threat assessment specialist. And he has been on the program once before. I got to add his other show. I forgot to do that. All right, everything isn't updated. There's still more to do. I'll do it while we're on the air. Lyle, so how much fun have you had the last 2 weeks?
Hey, it's so nice to be with you all again. I'm surprised that you invited me back on. But, but thank you.
Oh, we had a super good time last time you were on.
it's really wonders, isn't it, Bob, when I send a check over there and you guys cash it and they say, yeah, you can come back on.
Hey, wait a minute. We didn't know about that.
I didn't.
Is that
I
how you got that new van out from, Bob?
So far. That's really impressive.
Well, I figure you're hearing the celebration from a different segment of the population. So, what are you hearing out there?
Well, again, thank you for being such gracious hosts and allowing me back on. I don't have my sidekick Claire Lopez with me today, so maybe I'll get to actually answer some questions and say something.
He won't be preempted by Mount Rushmore again.
I always kid. She is really the varsity. She does wonderful work, doesn't she? And she is on the cutting edge of providing intelligence to the Congress and to many different sectors, not only here in the United States, but internationally. And it's always fun when I get to be with her. It's been quite a 2 weeks, you're right. Depending on which side of the aisle you're on, you're either celebrating or you're with many of the buttercups who are just gouging themselves with all sorts of sugar and cotton candy trying to figure out how to get through the next 24 hours. The election was not a surprise to some folks. If you'll remember, I sent a letter out on November 6th, 2 days before the election, and I believe Erin received it. And what I said was that based on Isaiah 45 in the Bible, I believed that we would have a respite and that Mr. Trump would be elected. Not because he walks on water, but because he's the right man at the right time to help save this country from going down a path it would have never come back from. We are still on a path that's rather tenuous. There are a number of issues, I'm sure we'll get into them, not only economic, but socially and culturally, that are very, very concerning and alarming. The past 2 weeks has demonstrated that he is serious about coming in and, as he claims, draining the swamp. If you look at the appointments he has already made, these are all stellar individuals in their fields. They're all well-credentialed, and they're all patriots, and they believe in the republic, not a democracy. And that's something, again, our schools don't teach, that we are a republic,
and that
not
is,
a
that's
democracy.
A huge point.
We're mob rules.
Absolutely.
The Democrats like to consider us a democracy because they love the idea of mob ruling.
Well, they say
but
it all the time, too.
A country of laws. Go ahead, ma'am. I'm sorry.
They refer to it as a democracy all the time. I mean, it's
always that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You guys are correct. And if you keep saying that, after a while, other people will slip up and start saying it. And then there's another person, then another. And before long, you have 20 people and then 30. And I mean, and that's what happens when you change a culture. You come in with a set of beliefs and agendas that are absolutely counterculture to the one that you're changing, and you begin to act as if these are the real ones and not the one that you're taking over. That's what's gone on with the liberals, where they have attempted very clearly over the last 8 and even longer years to change the culture of America. And if you dare stand up to them, you're a racist or something else they call you, whatever they think of. And more often than not, conservatives will back down, and they'll try to turn the other cheek. And what ends up happening is they get rolled over. Well, a person like Mr. Trump comes along who doesn't understand that game. He did not grow up in that venue, and it doesn't work. He doesn't turn the other cheek. And people don't know how to take that, and so they'll now come back up with name-calling and character assassination, where he's rude and crude. And yes, there's a moment here or there. He does not walk on water. Please, I'm not deifying him. But the man is very real, very transparent. If you really listen to him and watch him over the years, he doesn't really hide because he doesn't understand playing that type of a game. And so what he is looking for are people similar to him and definitely within lockstep of his belief system, and he has found them thus far. And I think there are several others that will be chosen, possibly even this week. It might be right after Thanksgiving.
I think the most problematic person that he's tapped so far is Steve Bannon from Breitbart. That set off a wave of... I don't even know if panic is a sufficient descriptor. They were freaking out about that.
Well, but Aaron, again, I wrote an article and I sent it out. I believe you get it. Maybe you don't read my stuff, but I'm going to start sending it to Bob.
I'm only one person.
Yeah, I'm going to start sending stuff to Bob and Bill. That's what I'll do.
That's what you should do.
Yeah, we'll hook
up. You know what she said to me, you guys? Aaron told me, well, I'm really sorry. I couldn't read any of your stuff and respond to any of your texts because I've been sick all week.
I think
she took a week off, don't you guys?
It's been almost 3 weeks, and it's coming back, and I'm really not happy about it.
Hey, don't feel bad. Don't feel bad. Even when she's not sick, I got to get an appointment to talk to her. So, you know.
Bill sends me pictures of casserole and says it's time to come home.
Yeah, I have to bribe her.
It's pretty funny, actually.
Oh
my
guys,
gosh.
This is like meet up on Aaron Day, isn't it?
I know. Isn't it great? I'm like, okay, I can do it. Unlike some of the people that I deal with during the week, I can actually take it. I was kind of laughed because I'm the oldest of 5 kids, and
actually,
you know,
maybe tame compared to what you're used to.
Yeah, a lot.
There.
We played pretty hard, and I always kind of laugh. I'm like, these people all must be only children. They've never. There was one guy actually. There was a guy on Facebook, kind of a cowboy looking guy, and he went on a little 2 or 3 minute rant. Where he talked about how all these kids have gotten a trophy their whole life, and
Yeah, never lost.
And never lost anything, and don't know how to deal with it. He put it in a really good way. I'll link that video on the page. It was pretty funny. It's like, well, that explains a lot, doesn't it? We better take a quick break here, or we'll be tardy the whole hour. We wouldn't want that, would we, Lyle?
No, ma'am.
You wouldn't want to force me to be tardy the whole time.
No, ma'am.
Yeah, you totally would. Dr. Lyle Rapacki, he's a private sector intelligence, behavioral analysis, and threat assessment specialist, and he works with the Arizona State Legislature. He works with all sorts of different agencies. He also, I'll read something from the bottom because I never get that far. He provides intelligence as a watchman to the Christian community nationally. And he writes a regular commentary for the Olive Branch Report, an online Christian publication. And we love having him on here. And last time we were so hurried, we thought we'd have him on again so we could just goof off. We'll be right back.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
We were in full victory lap today.
Yeah, like somebody said, be part of the solution or get out of the way.
I think,
or get in the back of the bus.
Actually, you've bastardized a couple of different quotations. Okay,
well, no, somebody else did.
Can I actually say bastardized on the radio? If I say it really soft. See, if I say it soft, it's different than if I say it out loud.
It is. It's much nicer.
So, Lyle, what about this cold case thing? Because I did read your email. By the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what about that?
Oh, now you're making up to me, aren't you? If it's okay with you, and even if it's not.
Since you're far away and I can't actually do anything about it.
Well, since this will be the last show I'll ever do on your program, can we do the cold case in just a second?
Yeah.
I'd like to share something, if I may, about Bannon, Mr. Bannon.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He has been demonized, and I wrote an article on him because he's not anti-Semitic, as they're putting out. But that's typical of character assassination. If the liberals don't get their way, they turn it into a personal attack, and you can get all gummed up in trying to defend yourself, in which you never will. It becomes a miasma, and you just get sticky into the whole thing. Steve Bannon is not anti-Semitic, and in fact, both the Anti-Defamation League, David Horowitz, and others took all that back. So after several days of attempting to slime him as such, they recanted all that. Steve Bannon came from a working class, blue-collar class background. And right after the high school, after he graduated, he joined the Navy. Then he comes back and he goes and gets really sophisticated education at Virginia Tech, Georgetown, and then Harvard Business School. Kind of sounds like a Trump person there. Then he goes to work for Goldman Sachs, and then he goes to Hollywood and works with the Seinfeld program. And he gets substantial royalties from the Seinfelds, which makes him very independent. All the while, he is conservative, but he's a nationalist. He believes in the United States. He does not believe in globalism. And much like Mr. Trump, he believes that people should be allowed, they should be given the opportunity to become all that they can be. That sounds like a commercial in itself, and I don't mean it that way. But this flies directly in the face of what has been pushed, at least over the last 8 years, if not longer, where Obama, Clinton, and others, both liberal Republicans as well as other Democrats have wanted to have a common ground where everybody gets a little piece of the pie. And that sounds sweet, and it sounds all nice. And if I gave each of you in there $5 and we all shared our $5, well, that's really kind of nice because we're all equal. But I'm also keeping you from gathering the other $5 or $10 or $15 or $20 that you could if I encouraged you to be all that you could be. And so you'll settle for that $5. Well, you look around, and Aaron has got $5, and Bill has $5, and Bob has $5, and everybody's co-equal, so you don't feel so bad, except when you begin to realize that there's other folks that are capitalizing on you remaining very low class. Bannon comes into the game because he was a Breitbart lieutenant. He and Breitbart were partners in that news organization. And some folks that I've known who knew him with Breitbart say that he was Breitbart's right brain, the other side of his brain. And they really were synergistic. They believe in the United States as a republic. They believe in free enterprise. They believe in helping people become all they can be. And I can go on down the road here. Well, Mr. Trump relates to this because he believes very much the same way. So when they came together, it was synergistic. And while Prince Rabus will go ahead and become the chief of staff and run the day-to-day operations, it's Bannon who will take a look at the longer picture. How will the Trump administration be viewed 10 years from now, 20 years from now? What are the foundational blocks, if you will, that Trump is going to build or lay down that will define his administration? Now, some of that has been already spoken of by Mr. Trump himself, but now it's going to be Bannon who will actually put that all together in a political format mechanism, if you will. Because this is something that people forget, that the White House is a political organization also, as well as a seat of power, government, and diplomacy. It is a political organization. And Mr. Bannon will be responsible for carrying out Mr. Trump's vision, but also putting a mechanism together to accomplish Trump's vision. So he's a very key player, and he is not anti-Semitic, but he is anti-one world government. He is anti-globalist, and that has got a lot of people very upset because we were well on our way to being collapsed as a independent nation, as a republic, and being brought into the one world order.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
And I think you're right on target, because I think the hardest thing they're going to have to overcome is this culture of dependence on the government to give you everything you need. And, you know, you can sit down and slide uphill, and all you have to do is stick your hand out. And that's going to be a tough lesson to learn.
Well, it was funny.
Oh, you guys are really right on. If you look at what has been, I hate to use this word, taught, but it's a correct word, taught in our universities, colleges, it is that. It's to be global citizens. It's to no longer accomplish out of your own giftings, out of your own strengths, but it's to be part of the commonality of man. We're all in this together. And again, it's a lot of buzzwords that sounds nice, it sounds touchy-feely, but it goes against the very foundation of this nation. And there have been forces at work, both in the media, in the political realm, and even in the business realm, to collapse the United States as an independent, sovereign nation, and to bring us into the global community. This is one reason 7 years ago, when I began to advise members of the Arizona legislature, and then a couple of years later, it was extended to other elected officials in other states. I said there would be no secure border if the intention was to secure the 2,000-mile border from San Diego all the way over to El Paso. If that intention was for real, we would have already had a secure border. But Bush did not want it secure. nor Clinton, absolutely. And then comes Obama. The idea here of securing the United States and allowing us to be the republic that we were created to be is antithesis to what the globalists want. They do not want the United States to succeed. In fact, it was targeted years ago under Bush Sr.
Yeah.
When he talked about in his State of the Union message that America was going to be part of the New World Order. And it was now time for the New World Order to come forward. Well, from that moment on, the United States was in the crosshairs. It became extremely evident over the last 8 years. But this has been going on for some time. The border was not to be secure. And I heard you guys say, I think in the beginning of the show, unless it's my meds kicking in, I'm hearing things. But
not you too.
There are 64 nations right now. There may be 66, but 64 that have built walls. So for the United States to secure its borders and to be so lambasted demonstrates just how much pressure has been placed on the United States to collapse its sovereignty, its independence, its republic status. There are 66 nations. So when Mr. Trump talks about building a wall and then he is lambasted, it's part of the campaign to discredit him immensely. And anyone who would stand with him, fortunately, more people stood with him than didn't.
Do you think,
so
Lyle...
He is building a wall. The appointments that he's made and a couple of others that appear to be coming down the pike are all people that understand the uniqueness, the gifting, if you will, of the United States to the world. We're not perfect again, the United States. We have our flaws. But one of our gifts is to promote freedom and allow countries to be all that they're supposed to be. And the globalists detest us. They hate us. Obama hates the United States. I will say that. I have said it in writing. He has proven it. He detests the United States. And so do the other Marxists that have come in and filtered through government. You heard a couple of weeks ago, Claire Lopez and myself, when we were on your show, Claire talked about, I think we both did, how the Muslim Brotherhood and other Marxists have infiltrated all 17 intelligence agencies in the United States and the executive branch and down through the cabinet. We're in some very, very serious trouble. And Mr. Trump being elected is a miracle that this country did not, on November 8th, literally start to turn out its lights.
You know, you hit a good point there with all the department heads and cabinet and so forth being infiltrated. I think a lot of that can go away fairly quickly with Trump. But what do you think? I mean, do you think his wall is going to be a reality? Do you think he's going to have enough support to actually get that done? Because I think
there's a ton of support.
That is a huge undertaking, but it really does need to be done.
Okay, hold that thought. We've got to take a really quick break here. And just in case people are wondering how Dr. Rapacki has this amazing insight, he also holds a postdoctorate diploma in forensic counseling and another in behavioral psychotherapy. And I just got a cartoon from a friend that says, it's kind of hard to feel sorry for people who think that the government should have unlimited power, but have never considered that it might end up in the hands of someone they don't like. So you have 2 minutes to analyze those people. We're going to take a quick break. You can find all of our information at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
put this thing between us. I'm not sure what's the cause. So I swallowed all my pride, and tonight I climb the wall.
They built it in two nights, Bill. It can be done.
Oh.
Hey, and my cartoon from the last segment. Gotta give a little thanks for the great emails to Bart Lovett, who constantly keeps me in stitches. That's why I'm coughing all the time, Lyle. That's what's happening. Getting these jokes all the time, and I lock it up.
I know. It is something.
There's so many to be made, too. So,
So,
what do you think about the wall?
Yeah, is it a reality? I mean, is it something that you think he can really pull off, or do you think there's going to be too much opposition and we're going to end up with a three-stand barbed wire fence and a couple of dogs?
I just don't see him doing that.
Well, I think the answers are yes, yes, no, and yes to the four questions. Yes, it is a reality. Yes, he is going to build it. Yes, they've already begun to look at the logistics of that. You have to appreciate, listeners have to appreciate that right now, today, there are a little over 23 miles of no wall or no border. I can take you to parts of Arizona, same with California, same with Texas, where there's nothing, literally nothing. You put one foot in the United States and one foot in Mexico, and it all looks the same. You would never know. Secondly, there are the wall is more than a metaphor, but let me just say that there are several patches. I can again speak with some clarity about Arizona, where there's certain mountain ranges. It would be absolutely difficult to build a solid wall, whereas a different form of a wall would go into place. But let me just say this. What I believe is going to happen is not only will there be a wall, a literal, more physical, substantial wall, because right now you've got people climbing over this thing where there is a wall that's 16 feet tall, and they scale it within seconds, and you can watch them, and that's with 100 pounds of marijuana on their back.
Wow.
There's video after video. I mean, even conventional media is now carrying it. So there has to be some changes there, and I believe there will be, because there's already discussions with people who are knowledgeable on how to do just that. Secondly, there will be secondary walls built in certain areas where it makes it even more difficult. Yuma, the area of Yuma, which is near Sandy, you know, kind of getting ready to come over into California there, they have miles of two walls where you have to scale one, then you go through about 75 yards of no man's land, 100 yards, and then you have to scale another wall. Well, in that 100 yards, there are trip wires and cameras that give sufficient time to alert that there's been a breach. And really, if you can have sufficient time to notify the proper authorities, and then they have sufficient time to respond, you're going to cut down on a lot of this. This is a proven fact, and it's happened very successfully for a number of years in the Yuma sector. So why now are we having problems? Well, because part of building a wall is enforcing the policies, and Obama and others have said you don't enforce the policies. Right now, Arizona, and I have intel from California and Texas, but I'll stick with where I'm at. Right now, Arizona has 40,000 crossers a month.
Oh, my gosh.
40,000. No one's discussing it. No one wants to talk about it. There is a rush to the border all across the southern border from San Diego to Texas, because word has spread that if once Trump gets in, they're going to seal the border. So word has gone out all over the place, and everybody's rushing to get in here. So I believe he is going to build a physical structure, but then besides that, Bill, he is going to put into place other technology that will help support that. Then on top of that, he's going to change, radically change the entire policy that is now immigration. And he's going to initially, and they've already begun the process of looking into this, they're going to initially get rid of 2 to 3 million illegals in the United States that are gangbangers and other criminal elements. That is an easy task to take from a political judicial standpoint. Physically, it is a little bit more difficult. You've got 2-3 million people you have to round up. That's true. But again, law enforcement, if law enforcement is turned loose, and again, I'll deviate and say that there's already soft discussions, because nothing can happen until January 20th officially, but there's already soft discussions and word is leaking out that a new playbook is going to be announced for law enforcement, and that is basically do your job and stop looking over your shoulders. Well, when that becomes public and formal, law enforcement will be free to do what they do best, and that is to preserve the law and maintain the security of this nation. And they are counting on that, and they've already started to gear up for that. So, yes, I think you're going to see tremendous positive changes bringing order to our national security and to our sovereignty. Again, much to the chagrin of the globalists. And if I could, and impose on your hospitality, you take a look at a program like Fox News. Rupert Murdoch is not, he's a globalist. He is not pro-America.
Right.
He loves the capitalism system. He loves making money, billions of dollars, off of Fox News. But he is a globalist. He does not promote, and Fox News and all their various different elements, if you really take a look at it and analyze it, are starting to move to the left. Or, now what's gonna happen, they're gonna move more to the centralist. And I'll predict to you guys that Megyn Kelly will be the center of Fox News coming up.
Well, that's a bad sign.
She will be the kingpin, which means they're going to be knocking down a couple of the heretofore kingpins, like Breitbart, O'Reilly, and Hannity. So he is going to reshape the Murdoch boys. Are going to reshape Fox News, or the Fox Channel, if you will, around Megyn Kelly. I'll make that prediction.
But don't you think it would be in their best interest? I mean, let's face it, their goal is to make money, and if the public sentiment is go, secure the border, get it done, wouldn't they kind of get on board with that?
It's only half the public sentiment.
Well, I would think that. You and I, we all might think like that, but these are globalists, and they have an agenda that is vastly different than ours. If they have to steer to the right a little bit or back up and go this way, I mean, they will, because they're not going to lose sight of their agenda, their ideology, and that is that the United States will collapse one way or the other. This whole idea of Trump coming in, it's just got them wringing their hands. There's a lot of angst over this. Mr. Trump getting in was a miracle, I believe, presented by God to the United States, because there were sufficient people praying across the United States for help, for relief.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe Mr. Trump is going to fix everything, but I do believe he's giving us a respite. He's giving us a period of time to catch our breaths. We're in that much trouble, and still are. I mean, there are some serious, serious economic problems right on the horizon here. The border, other things that we're talking about are serious, serious problems. But there's some even bigger ones that he's going to have to deal with. Again, his appointment of Lieutenant General Flynn was just huge, and it sent a message to a lot of people in the global community that Trump is serious. You all will remember during the election, on several occasions anyway, Mr. Trump talked about having about 200 generals supporting him. You all remember that?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So he had about 200. I mean, the number could be more specific, but 200 generals and admirals supporting him. They had come out, and they publicly supported him. And he had about 20 or 22, 23 Medal of Honor winners who also came out and endorsed him and stood with him. Well, that all came about because of Lieutenant General Flynn. Lieutenant General Flynn absolutely saw the cover-ups, the lies, the destruction of the military through by the Obama people. He saw what took place, CIA, Pentagon, State, National Security Council, up close because he was part of that until he was discharged. And so he came to Trump and said, this is what's going on, and if you are for real, then this has to be addressed. And Mr. Trump is addressing it. Well, now Lieutenant General Flynn is the national security advisor to the president-elect. And in that capacity, he will be the individual who will begin to sort through all the different agencies, all the different reports that are coming up from the intel communities that have to be put into a usable format, if you will, for the president's daily brief, the PDR, and given to the president. And he's the one that he will be one of the key people giving that briefing every day. This is very, very key position. Well, when you take a look at the behavior of General Flynn and his belief system, he is, again, very republic-minded, very sovereign-minded. He's a nationalist in that sense, believes in the supremacy of the United States, not to the degree that you go and take over another country to make them like the United States, but if a country is crying out for the help of the United States, Mr. Flynn believes that it is the United States' responsibility to at least seriously look at that cry for help. That was not what was taking place over the last 8 years.
No, before
nor was
it was
taking place during the Clinton.
Yeah, how can we benefit? And let's go roll these knuckleheads and put in our own guys. What a dumb plan. We have to take another really quick break. Dr. Packy, we will be back in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
This one's for Megan.
Oh.
Silver wall, bang, bang. Gone like a 59 Cadillac.
that song every week for a while. It's my new favorite song.
I was listening to that one last night. And I'm like, oh man, I didn't realize how much I liked that song. Lyle, are you in there with us?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Oh, good. Okay. You're so quiet.
Oh no, I was just loving that song. I think Bill has done a phenomenal job picking music.
Yep, that's Bob. Sorry,
that's Bob.
Oh, is that Bob?
Yeah, we should send you pictures of all of us so you can put some faces with.
Yeah, please, that way.
Hey, have somebody else take it.
I know I have limited time, but could I just throw out a couple of things?
Kill it.
Obama just came out because there's been a lot of pressure on him to pardon Snowden. And allow Snowden to have a free reign. And he just came out and said that he can't pardon someone who has not gone before a court and who has not been officially charged.
That's not true.
Well, that's phenomenal because that means he can't pardon Hillary either. There you go. So, again, this is his get-out-of-jail card, no pun intended. He doesn't like Hillary anyway, but this gives him the excuse that he can't do what the Hillary people want him to do. Next thing...
That's great.
The Queen of England just issued a personal invitation, which is not done normally. It's usually done through the prime ministers and stuff. But the Queen herself issued a personal invitation for Trump to visit England and her at a state function almost quickly after his election. I'm sorry, after his inauguration. And it's been accepted. This is huge because, again, you have the globalists, and she is one. You have the globalists trying to figure out who this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, Mr. Trump has put the globalists, the elitists, on notice that he is not going to be tampered with and go along with their program, which is what Obama has so blindly done for 8 years. And then you asked me about the announcement I sent out to y'all about the birth certificate investigation. On December 15th, that's how it's tentatively scheduled right now, there will be a press conference in Phoenix, Arizona, by the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office and both Sheriff Arpaio, who's on his way out of office, and the lead investigator for the cold case posse, Mike Zullo, are going to be holding a formal press conference giving the findings of the birth certificate investigation. It's been 5 years. I can say that I've been privileged to provide some consultations in the matter, so I'm limited in what I can share, but I will tell you that I believe people will be not surprised but stunned. But not surprised by the findings, because for 8 years, Obama's been nothing but a lie. And I think you're going to find that the findings, the results, the painstaking investigation has turned up conclusive evidence of the lies put forward by Mr. Obama. So that's on December 15th. Now, that is, it's in pencil. In other words, they're already moving in that direction for the 15th. It has to be before January 1st because the new sheriff takes office on January 1st, unlike the president who takes office on January 20th. So the new sheriff comes in from Maricopa County on January 1st, and he has already said that he will disband the entire cold case posse and any investigations to that effect. So this announcement will come out and scheduled for December 15th, and that's why I released that to y'all.
Well, that's going to be...
That'll be the coup de grace.
Yeah, that's going to be so... There's so much stuff that's going to come out after January. I think people's heads are going to be spinning. We need to have you back, Lyle, and I mean, you've got the inside track.
Aaron's not biting me back, but you are. Thank you.
Okay. Definitely.
Bill's running it. Bill's in charge. I knew we'd have a good time. Hey, thanks a lot. Have fun on your other show.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thanks, Lyle.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later. All righty. That was our guest, Dr. Lyle Rupacki out of Arizona. Fun guy. Does a lot of national security stuff. He's got a good resume. Go to our website, wethepeopleradio.us, for all the info, and we'll be back with Christian Rule on the VA.
afternoon. You are joining the second hour of We the People Radio. You can find all of our information on sponsorship programs, how to contact us for ideas and suggestions at wethepeopleradio.us. Bill's doing some kind of strange dance over there. What's going on with that strange dance over there?
It's just a happy dance.
Still doing the happy dance.
Still doing the happy dance. I mean, if we can still have crying, I can still do the happy dance.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Far be it from me to interfere with your happy dance.
Mm-hmm.
So, apparently there is no Santa at the VA this year. My hashtag is Crimea River.
Yeah.
We have our guest, Kristen Rule, joining us from Philadelphia today. Now, it says here, Kristen, that you're an authorization quality review specialist, but is that still true?
You're not paper. Yes. I haven't done that job in a little over a year.
Right, because you're doing something much better.
Yes, I work with the MyVA Task Force, and I have nothing but good things to say about it.
Yes, and they have been awesome, and they have been awesome to the veterans in our area and reached out in a really good way and helped with systems fixes and just individual problems, too, led by Scott Blackburn, and we've had several. There's a link here on the page that'll take you to the all the collective shows on veterans, and the MyVA Task Force stuff is exempted from all of our derision. How's that? They'll get a derision exemption.
Well, there's some very exciting things that we have to report with MyVA. There's a new MyVA 311 number. I don't know if you know about that yet, but
no.
We'll get into that later.
What's
That's
it
very
do?
Helpful for veterans.
What does it do?
Well, in the past, don't quote me on the exact number, but I had heard we had over 900 1-800 numbers at the VA.
Oh, I totally believe that.
Yes, they are trying to fix that so that you can call one number, and then you can be routed to where you need to go.
Oh, my gosh.
So there's a new phone number, 1-844-MYVA-311.
What? All right, I better write that down. All right, say it again. It's 800... My VA 311
1-844-MYVA-311.
My VA 311. Hey, that's fun.
Yeah, so that's, you know, something awesome. And I'm from Philadelphia, and we have Philly 311. And when I first moved here, if you needed something from the city, it was very hard to get in touch with them for different things. And the person who I believe the person who was in charge of Philly 311 was actually working with MyVA 311.
Oh, interesting. So if you have problems with, like, a water leak or sewer or garbage, like city-type services, you would call the 311?
Mm-hmm. Like there'll be a car parked outside, you know, flat tires that hasn't moved in days. I actually tested it out in Philly, and within a day the problem was solved.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm very excited about this because, you know, like everything else Scott has been working on, I've seen success, so I'm hoping this will be the same.
Nice. And so, just sort of in, none of us know exactly what's going to happen going forward, but this task force, the idea is that it carries forward to the new administration and continues on.
Yeah, I'm hoping very much so, because I think, like, when we had Scott on the show previously, he mentioned it's kind of like a 10-year plan to fix the VA.
Sure.
And we're only in year two, so if they say, you know, is it fixed yet, I'm sure Scott would agree with me to say we have a long way to go, but I'm seeing more progress than I've seen in the 8 years that I've worked there.
Nice. And so as far as, you know, when they call that number, the 844-MYVA-311, they call that number, and it could be for what? What types of things would they call that for?
I haven't tried it myself, which I should have, but the idea is that veterans, their families, and caregivers can access information about the VA services, different things like disability, pension, health care eligibility, enrollment, burial benefits. It'll help you find the nearest VA facility. If you need, like, immediate assistance with things like housing or a mental health crisis, it could route you to the Homeless Veteran Helpline and the Veterans Crisis Line. So, you know, instead of having to remember, like, a whole bunch of different numbers, if you just know the one phone number, you're supposed to be able to get whatever you need.
Nice. Well, that I remember you guys were talking about that the last time we did a show with you.
The good thing is when Scott talks about things, I actually see them happen. Sometimes it takes a little longer, you know, than we would wish because he's trying to do it the right way. But I'm pretty excited about this one.
No kidding, because it is a rat race. You call this 800 number, you get put on hold. And then some of the, I know all the systems are independent, so depending on where you're calling, if their system is not, you know, working very well, a certain clinic I won't mention, you either wind up on hold forever or you get disconnected. So
yeah, and I mean, just like anything else, if anyone has a problem with it, you know, they're actually encouraging people to tell us, you know, what happened if you did have a problem when you called it, because they want to fix it. Because the whole idea is it's supposed to be a 24/7 one-stop information service for all VA services. So.
Oh, that is great. And then what's the, like if people were going to go find out more about MyVA, what's the best way to do that?
There's a lot of information online, so I can provide, you know, some of the websites. But I know on VA.gov there's all kinds of information, but I'm not sure where the best place to go for everything about MyVA would be. But
okay.
I can find out for you.
Yeah, because I have it in a different email system. I do have the update on all of the MyVA stuff, but I'll see if I can do that. Let's see how many things I can do at the same time. I'll work on that. So for the people that are asking me in the chat room what's the web address, just hang with us while we talk amongst ourselves and look up those numbers. I know, I'm sure there is a web address on there, and I just didn't look it up. My bad.
Me either, and since I work there, I'm used to seeing everything, but actually looking for it from the outside.
Yeah, you probably don't have to go look it up very often.
Right. So,
I'm
glad you asked.
Well, wait, hold on. Somebody in our chat room, Dr. Maria, is faster than we are. She says it's va.gov/myva.
Thank you.
I guess I could actually put that on the website. Huh? That'd be useful. So that when I say go there for all the information, it would actually be there. What a novel concept.
It's a work in progress.
Exactly. That's why we leave the editing window open, and then we can just go there along the trail. I just was, I totally thought of you because I got my hands on a, email, actually. It wasn't a memo. It was an email from, I don't know what V21MAC means, but I'm guessing it's VISN21. And I don't know what an MAC is, something, but it said all staff, so it came from the VA. The subject was what caught my eye. Moratorium on awards processing until further notice.
Dang. There goes Santa Claus.
I was like, huh, well, that's a novel idea. It said, we regret to inform you that there is a VA-wide moratorium on processing all awards until further notice as indicated in the message from VA Central Office below. This means we will not be giving out performance awards prior to Christmas as we have in the past. We hope to hear soon that the moratorium is lifted. Sorry, that was the part where I started laughing. However, based on the information provided, we expect a reduced amount of award money will be available. We will keep you informed when we receive updates. And the part that was highlighted, I am immediately imposing a moratorium on processing awards till further notice. And I kind of laughed because I thought, gee, weren't there like a zillion laws passed over the last few years? I know the last four in particular I've been paying real close attention to.
And they
stopped the bonuses a long time ago, and they keep telling us there aren't any.
That, you know, perhaps people don't deserve a bonus now and then, but
that's true.
It's what they're getting the bonuses for that I have a real problem with.
Well, there's all sorts of goofy stuff. I don't know what's going on, but Our information was always that there were no bonuses, and then you get a thing like this. I'm like, really? So I don't know.
Yeah, and that's
What do you?
I didn't even know about that. But I think that most, at least I can speak for most of the employees that are, you know, in the field, like I used to be and still really am. To me, I don't really care if I get a bonus or not. A lot of us go to work because we want to go to work, and we want to help veterans, and we want to do our best, and our paycheck is enough.
That's why we love you.
For what we do.
And there are a lot of people in the VA just like you.
There really are.
A lot of good
folks. I noticed that some of the hardest workers, you know, are are some of the lower paid people at the VA. And I'm not taking anything away from the higher paid people, because
that's our job.
That I work with, they work extremely hard as well. But I will say that there are people that do deserve a bonus, you know, if they had extra money for bonuses, but if they don't, I think most of the employees, at least the ones that I know, to them that isn't really even a big deal.
Yeah, and like I say, there's just a ton of folks that work at the VA that do a great job, that are there for the right reasons, but there are some bad apples, and I think those are the folks that might be a little bit worried about what's coming in January.
Yeah, you notice any? Oh, wait, before I do that, we better take a quick break. Sorry, I was just getting ready to launch into something else. That's how we get behind. We're here with Kristen Rule from the Philadelphia. I can't say Philadelphia VA because you're actually not in their system. What do I say? You just live in Philadelphia and work on the task force for the VA? Is that good?
Sure.
We don't want to mischaracterize her. And so she kind of gives us a little window into what's really going on, so we don't have to guess. Because guessing, yeah, you can make mistakes doing that. So you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
So many lies, you twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
All right, so Kristen, what's really going on in there after the election?
Honestly, that's one thing that you really don't hear that much about, because there's something called the Hatch Act, where we get reminded as federal employees that there's certain things we're not supposed to discuss on the work computer during work hours, and a lot of it deals with political stuff or, you know, who you're favoring to be the candidate. So most of the people on my team that I work with, I have no idea if, you know, who they were even in favor for, because it isn't even something that comes up. And that's something really cool I will say about the VA, at least where I work now. They honestly just focus on the veterans. They really have not cared on my immediate team who was going to win this election. They just care that whatever good things they're doing for the veterans, that those are explained accurately so that the next person can, you know, choose to continue them if they agree, or at least take the good parts of the programs.
And you know, the people that I've talked to that you work with, just the handful of them that I've actually spoken with, world of difference.
I think a lot of people were in shock. I mean, after the election, where some of those rules don't apply anymore because we know who was selected and we know, you know, which way we're headed. I think a lot of people were in shock after the election, and I think that they're wondering who's going to be the next VA secretary. I'm wondering that myself.
Well, we had to, and I guess that's that was a kind of a question for you. What are you hearing out of the big office, out of the, you know, the regional office and that sort of thing, with because the name that's been floated has been Jeff Miller, who, for folks that are not down in the weeds on this stuff, like we all are, he is currently a congressman out of Florida and is the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. So he's been doing lots of investigations. And then I think it was last Wednesday, really, it started popping up online. You know, Jeff Miller, since he's not running for his seat, he's retiring, he was all of a sudden popping up as a potential choice for Secretary of the VA.
I think a lot of employees, mainly the rank and file employees, those are the people that I deal with aside from my current job on a daily basis at work, but my extracurricular outside of work activities where I try and help people and, you know, come up with solutions to fix things if possible, most of those people, they were pretty excited with the name that was floating around. But a lot of people also, you know, like who we have right now, because a lot of these things that are happening that are positive for the VA were McDonald's idea.
Right, so true story.
I think most people at the VA are seeing that things are getting better. I mean, I was just talking to somebody in the Philadelphia Regional Office on Friday, and they said that they can't believe how much better things are there. So I feel like, you know, whether Bob McDonald stays or we have somebody new, I think that's a good thing if he stays. And if we have somebody new, I'm hoping it's somebody that cares about accountability. And I was thinking about this today. Most of the things that we do read in the media were exposed because of whistleblowers. So whoever they select, I want it to be somebody that protects a whistleblower, because the way that the VA, the way we find out most of the information about the VA is from the whistleblowers. Like, you know, the bureaucrats weren't the ones that raised the waitlist scandal or the cooking of the books. It was the people that worked there. So if we don't have somebody that is receptive to people when they're trying to improve the place and tell them what's going on, they're not going to know that much about what's happening inside.
True.
So,
and the folks
like
in the legislative side that are supposed to be funding it and supervising it, who hear from the constituents all the time in the House and Senate seats, they can't possibly break through, you know, what did Scott taught us, that the VA, if it was a Fortune 500 company, would be number six, and they have upward of 360,000 employees. So,
yeah,
honestly,
I mean,
getting elected to office and going in and, like, fixing it, one person, it's just completely not happening. But without people like you, who have been, can we call you a perennial whistleblower? Because it's been, like, 6 years, right?
I know, right? Well,
so without the perennial whistleblower, we're screwed.
You know, the whistleblowers have really brought probably the majority of these issues to light. And I know they say, you know, whistleblowers have protection and, you know, no bad things
so
will happen.
Dope.
But they really haven't gotten that protection a lot of the time. And I'm just hoping that whoever takes over continues to support the whistleblowers and gives them a little more of the protection that they really deserve. And I don't know. Would you agree with that?
I definitely agree with it, because, I mean, there's always going to be a law that so-called protects you, but there's always a way around all those laws as well. And usually when you're a whistleblower, you don't get fired for whistleblowing. They try and fire you for other things.
Or just torment you until you leave. That's actually seems to be the most common.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's one of these things where I've even noticed recently that, and I feel like whistleblower has sort of a negative connotation.
Yeah, it does.
I don't really love the word, so if I was in charge of the VA, I would probably call it something else, you know, something that sounds, like, positive. And
I would... quality improvement volunteer?
Right, and so and that's how I that's how I look at it, when because a lot of people will reach out to me, and they'll tell me, you know, there's a problem, or there's a glitch in the system, or these payments aren't going out right. And I used to not know where to go when I'd have that information, when I was reporting it myself. I would try everywhere I could think of, and it just wouldn't get anywhere. I'd come back to square one and be like, I'm out of people. Who do I email? What do I do? Recently, and then now some people, they find things out, and they tell me them. And so I have a choice now when I have information. I can either call the IG, or I can report it internally to the VA. I'd say 4 years ago, 3 years ago, that was not an option for me, the second one. Because when I tried, I found out that it was just causing me more problems and the information was not, you know, it wasn't going anywhere. Recently, when I hear something, it could be minor, it could be major, and I send it through the channels, I see results. Like, I see people being thankful for giving the information and wanting to fix it. So I already see with the new people that are in charge of different places, them a big change, which is awesome. So if the people that we get at the very top are the same way, I think there'll be a huge culture shift at the VA, which I think is the main problem with the place.
Yeah, and that, you know, back to my bonus memo there, these guys, what is the one here? SES Performance Awards. So those are Senior Executive Service Performance Awards. Well, I'm sorry, but those guys are the ones, a lot of them, like, you know, Diana Rubens and Kimberly Graves and you know, some of these other people, they're the ones who need to be gone. And unfortunately, apparently, they're sucking up bonuses, and they continue to do bad stuff.
And, I mean, most of the bonuses are public record, and when I look them up, I notice that some of the more higher-paid people get a lot more money than the people that are in there every day working in the trenches. So to the average employee, when you work in the private sector, at least when I did, you can get a pretty big bonus at Christmas time for doing your job or doing a little better than your job. But at the government, and with an exception of SEF people, because I've seen some of the reported bonuses that they allegedly got, and they're nothing like the ones that the rank-and-file employees get. So I don't think anybody that works at the level I work at, or slightly lower or higher, comes to work because of a bonus. Because
yeah, true.
It's you know, they're so happy if they do get one, but it's usually a couple hundred dollars, which most people are extremely thankful for. But that's, you know, I don't think that's a make-or-break decision for the average person who's doing most of the work in the trenches.
No, but the bonuses at the other end are certainly more than a couple hundred dollars, and those aren't really the folks I think that should be bonused. I mean, yeah, they have a lot of responsibility and have a lot of weight to pull, but it's the folks at the bottom that are really doing the work. I mean, if you're going to recognize somebody, those are the folks I think we need to recognize. They're just.
And I think when the media talks about the bonuses, it actually gets a little bit offensive to the people that are doing all the work, because they always, you know, they're like, we're doing our best, we're trying our hardest. And then there's a few select people that are doing things that maybe aren't the best things to be doing, business practices, and it makes all of us look bad. So,
sure, because you have veterans waiting and waiting and waiting on claims, and you know, the medical appointments, and you know, all these other things that are going on, and then you find out people are being rewarded, and the first thing you think of is, well, I can't get my basic stuff done, so why is that happening? And I don't think it's ever going to look good until really the thing is streamlined a bit more.
Well, plus the way that they rate people is very interesting at the government. It's, you know, a system where you get rated fully successful, or you could get excellent, or you could get outstanding. And in my experience, the amount of your bonus depends on the rating for the year. So you have these performance standards, and as long as you meet them, you're supposed to be rated accordingly. So where it gets interesting is, you know, you have some people who get different ratings for different reasons. And I feel that the true answer to a lot of the problems is to revamp the performance standards, especially for some of the highest people in management at the VA. Because when someone is allegedly doing something wrong and you want to hold them accountable, they need to know that what they did was wrong. And if you look at their standards and they really don't have much accountability there, that's, I think, why the VA has a hard time sometimes holding people accountable.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to talk about that a little bit more, because I don't think, you know, it's interesting, the idea of production and all those things. I mean, it sounds like a good idea, but I think we get into it, some of those things should change and are creating parts of the problem. But we've got to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with Kristen Rule, who is she's a perennial whistleblower, I guess. What is she? Quality control volunteer?
Quality control volunteer, yeah.
We need to come up with our better... Oh, and here is her special song. Sorry, I won't distract from that any longer. Take it away, Kristen.
Suspect.
I'm afraid. While shivering in my shoes, I strike a careless pose and whistle a happy tune, and no one ever knows I'm afraid.
It's a little tribute to Diana Rubens and her big fat relocation scam. She and Kimberly Graves. And if you'd like more on that, obviously we've done a bazillion shows. Go to wethepeopleradio.us, click on the Veterans tab, and you can follow all that. It's in print, and so we added all the articles, and if you've missed all that, you might want to go back and look at it, because it was kind of fun, actually, and it made us angry, but we had a good time with it. What more can you say? So, we were talking about standards and you know, why it's so difficult to make changes in personnel and hold people accountable. I realize every job has its own different things and different places, but what's the general gist of how you guys are evaluated?
If you're on production and quality, it's a very tough job, because you'll get standards at the beginning of the fiscal year, and you're told, you know, you need to maintain, for somebody who does the claims, for instance, so if you apply for compensation or pension or any of our VBA benefits, a lot of those employees are on production, so you will send your claim in, and the person that works on your claim has to make X amount of points a day, depending on their grade level, to maintain passing with their standards. So, consequently, there are some claims that can be done really fast, because there's only a few pieces of paper in the veteran's file, and they don't have many conditions that they're claiming. So sometimes the points are attainable, but there's other situations, which I see far too often, where there's a lot of conditions claimed. You know, some veterans need a little more help than other ones, and on paper you can't judge. I don't understand how the VA can say that every claim should take this many minutes and you should get this many points for this type of claim, because depending on the veteran's unique situation, a claim can take 2 hours or it can take 20 minutes. So I believe that's a huge problem, at least on the VBA side, because if you don't get these points, and it's like a batting average. So if I'm supposed to get 16 points today and I only got 14, if I don't get 18 tomorrow, then I'm going to be failing. When you're failing, then this is never a good thing. Usually you go on this performance improvement plan where they check every case that you do, and the idea is supposed to make you perform better. But I've represented quite a few people who, once they've been on a performance improvement plan, their next step was the door. So people get real freaked out about these production standards, understandably, and it's a very high-stress situation, because they're worried every day, am I going to be able to come back? And
well, see, normally, okay, from the outside looking in, I think people listening would say, well, good, I'm glad they're on a performance standard, because, you know, we want them to work faster. That's why the system's bottlenecked.
But imagine if you're that veteran who has
exactly
15 claimed conditions, and that person working your claim has 20 minutes to get their last 1 point for the day. And if they don't, it's a problem, so they have no choice but to finish your claim in 20 minutes. So, you know, and some people, they'll stay extra and they'll do it. They'll do the time that's necessary to get the claim done. But other people have to figure out a way to cut corners so they can survive on this point standard. And I feel like a lot of the things, at least that I reported, anytime I testified before Congress, the one thing I always would say, well, one of the things I would always say is, I think this production system is causing people to engage in corruption that normally might not have even be that type of person. Like, everything that I had reported, I could link back to this point system, and that, in my opinion, it was done because they needed to pull numbers. They needed to make quotas. If they didn't, no matter what level you were at, you know, if the central office says we need to do 30,000 claims in this office this month and we only do 25, we have to make up 5,000 the next month.
Yeah, exactly. So it totally shifts the focus from real performance to, oh, I got to meet my numbers and get my bonus.
When really there should be a recidivism standard. So if all these claims are coming back and being appealed, that should tell you that there's a I mean, some people will appeal any decision, but in fairness, most of these things have to be appealed because they're being denied because they didn't look at all the evidence. They're being denied because they didn't wait long enough for files to return from some location that they requested. And the bad part is then, poof, now you're denied. Now all of a sudden you're in the appeal system, and the appeals are a mile out.
And I, one thing I was just discussing last week with somebody is I said, I bet you if we fix the production issue, the appeals problem could actually fix itself.
Yes.
Because I think of it as, you know, when I was a kid, my mom would say, clean your room. Well, I could do it real fast and run outside and play, and then my mom would check, and if it wasn't done the right way, I'd have to come back in and start over. So if you add up the two room cleanings, it always took me longer to do it twice than do it one time the right way.
Sure.
So I feel like the claim situation is exactly the same. And even if you even spread it to VHA, if you come in and the doctor spends 10 more minutes with you answering all your questions so that you feel good when you leave, I think that'll avoid, in the end, it'll save time.
Correct.
Because sometimes people are just making more appointments because they didn't get all the information they needed the first time. And so
or,
I feel like
or stuff is going untreated, and then they're having a lot of problems. I hear that quite a bit. It's funny on the claims, and I was speaking with someone yesterday, and I said, you know, because he's in an appeal process, and it's been there for years. And I said, you know, it'd be almost like if every court case that started out at the lowest level was mishandled, and a huge percentage of them wound up at the Supreme Court. I mean, they're not prepared. You know, the volume is supposed to be handled at the lower levels. So,
and I mean, there's things that have happened in the last few years, which I didn't really, when I really looked into this, because it was fascinating to me, like, you know, how do we fix this? And I, you know, that we had the Niemer decision that came out where there was new presumptive conditions for veterans. So, like, logically, that created a lot more claims to our caseload. That the VA, you know, this decision gets ruled one way, and instantly we have this mass of claims coming in. Well, they didn't hire a mass of new workers. So the VA had to do its current caseload plus all the new presumptive conditions coming in with the same manpower they had before, and then they were being told you have to do this, you know, whatever the standards were for whoever. It just got a bit overwhelming, I feel like, and people were trying to meet standards, and somewhere along the way, not everybody, but certain people might have lost the focus of why you're coming to work. Not to say I did 10 claims a day to do them right and make sure our customers are happy.
Well, imagine if, you know, I always think about this. Imagine if, like, Allstate and State Farm and the people who process auto claims, you know, could you imagine if that took 5 years, 6 years, if everything had to go to an appeal, if you had to have everything re-adjudicated? Instead of just call your adjuster, you know, get a shop quote, go get the car fixed, bill gets paid. I'm sure some of them get screwed up. But, oh, my gosh, if we turned that into a train wreck like this, can you imagine? I'm sorry, it's going to be 6 years until we can get your car fixed. I don't know. It doesn't happen anywhere else but here.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just like the other thing is, you know, if you have this really high stress, like when I did the claims, it was extremely stressful because on one hand, you want to do the right thing and you want to do the claim right, but you know if you take the time you need to do the claim right, you might not have a job anymore and you won't be able to come back and help people. So you leave, like, I would get sweaty sometimes at my desk and just be nervous all the time. And, you know, a lot of people have a life outside of work as well, and it just trickled into their everyday life. So what I would see is people would work here for a few years, and we'd spend money to train them, and they'd finally get, you know, a lot better at the job through the more claims they process and the more experience and training they have. But because of the stress of the job, they leave. And a lot of our people recently, at least in the Philly office, have gone into the Department of Labor because I guess they don't have to deal with that kind of stuff there, or at least that's what they say. I'm not sure. I've never worked there, but I think it's a disservice, too, when these people are all stressed out and they're always looking for a new job, because then you have to retrain somebody. And someone who just started work 3 weeks ago is not going to be as accurate on that claim as somebody who's worked there for 3 years.
Sure. So, if we're blowing them out at the bottom, yeah, I can totally see that.
So you're always having a new person work on the claim that they might be giving their best and doing it the best that they were taught, but just because they haven't worked there long enough, they haven't seen this before, you know, they made a mistake. So I feel like there's a lot to be said in changing this culture, treating the employees right, making sure the claims aren't treated as a widget in a factory, but instead a human being. And, you know, it's, you could buy 10 houses on a block and rehab all of them, and one might take a lot more and cost a lot more than another. But to say you must do them all in this amount of time for this amount of money, most reasonable people would say that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, not possible. So what would be your first, what would be your first fix? Take, if you took off the performance improvement, no, the, what's it called? The points thing. I'm thinking of the punishment. The performance improvement plan is the punishment. The production. If you took that production goal off, how do you still get, you know, keep everybody on track, and how do you keep the production rolling without that? Like, how would you re-metric it?
I would measure more, you know, is this person who's processing this claim, are they making the correct decision?
Yeah.
Instead of how fast are they doing this?
Yeah.
And, you know, there are always going to be the employees that if they don't have a standard, they might be tempted to not do as much work as they should that day. But I also believe that the VA has issues in their hiring process, which I am pleased to say. Every year the VA has priorities, each fiscal year, that they're going to work on. And I think HR has been one of the priorities. So the good thing is, if we could hire the right kind of people, I don't think you would have to worry about that kind of stuff. Like, in my previous jobs when I didn't work at the government, no one hounded me and, you know, told me I had to do this much or I was going to get in trouble. I just came to work and did my best, and it was always good enough.
Yeah, there has to be.
Also, when I got hired for those jobs, I had an extensive screening process, and the interview that I had was much different than the interview at the VA.
Oh, interesting. And you also, you guys don't have a lot of requirement for employees. I know that we've talked about that a little bit before, but I believe it's time and grade is the secret handshake for that.
Yeah, that's a major issue, and I don't know if that's how the whole entire government operates or just the VA, but a lot of the jobs at the VA, if you want to apply for another job, I'm a GS-12, so I can't apply for a GS-14 or 15 job. So I can only apply for a GS-12 job or a GS-13 job because you need to have time and grades. So what I believe is, say that there's a GS-15 out there and there's a problem with them and they want to replace them. Well, who do you replace them with? And the choices are the other GS-14s out there that have served for a year in their position or another GS-15. And if they've all moved up the ranks the same way, and they've learned the same things, and they all, you know, have the same type of business techniques here, to me that's a concern because the available people to choose for this job is not that big.
So you wind up by replacing a broken toy with another broken toy out of the box.
And, I mean, there's some toys that aren't broken at the very high levels, but sometimes we just see people getting shifted around and, you know, oh, well, it didn't go well at this place, we'll move you over here. Well, you know, why not bring in a new person? You know, but, okay, so do you take somebody from the outside world who's never worked at the VA before, or do you take someone inside? Well, if you take someone inside, you're only limited to these people. And
yeah, that's a good point.
The other issue is, you know, we're doing a lot better with telework, but some of the jobs, you know, if you're not willing to move to Washington, D.C., then, you know, you're out of the runnings. So I feel like if there was more telework opportunities at the higher level jobs, the pool of people would be a lot better. You wouldn't have to pay people relocation to move to this place.
Sure.
Because
to keep shifting
it, you know,
from spot to spot.
Yeah, the pool of qualified people.
Right.
Yeah.
So where I feel like, oh, I could do this job better than X, number one, a lot of times I'm not even allowed to apply because I don't have time and grade. And number two, I look on paper and I say, wow, you know, I have this degree and I have this degree and this person doesn't have any of this, but they worked here longer than me, so they're allowed to apply and I'm not. And I think that's a huge problem in the government.
Yeah.
And,
sure,
you know,
don't
some
always
people
get the
worked
quality
here forever
people.
Have skills that I'll never get because I don't have 20 years of experience, but in my experience, I don't always think the people that worked here the longest are the most qualified people.
Yeah, it's the feeder principle in action.
We see that in the school system, too. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. We're chatting with Kristen Rule about the VA and kind of possibly where they, you know, might be headed going forward. We've got good information on the MyVA process, just so you can go look up that stuff. It is va.gov/myva, M-Y-V-A. Phone number, that really neat phone number she gave us for all sorts of information, is 844-MY-VA-311. So, anyway, good intel today. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People.
What are your songs for Hillary?
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something wrong, now I long for yesterday.
When I turn the other way, I don't want to see you cry.
Can't get over the we're not over the election yet. We're just not.
No.
The jokes are still coming out, the songs are still available. We're just gonna, you know, just gonna roll with it.
And the memes are priceless.
And the memes are amazing, actually. This could also go for the no Santa this year at the VA. Could go either way. So Kristen, What do you think about making a change on the time and grade thing? What do you think you'd see first off? Think you'd see some people retire? Oh, actually, I should ask you that. With the changes that are kind of imminent, you think we're going to see some people taking their retirement? Of course, that's just a guess on your part.
If I were some people, I probably would consider that, depending on who comes into office next. But so I would bet yes. I would bet we might see some retirements. But do I have any inside info on that?
No.
Nope, not at all.
No, and if you did, you really shouldn't actually say anything. It's probably not a good career move on your part. And we like what you do, and you do a good job, so we'd like not to shoot you in the back. But I would think when I read the Jeff Miller thing, it was something I had never considered. And I thought, oh, I bet there's like an exodus being planned.
And something I learned, which I did not know prior to being a whistleblower, because I never really thought about it or I guess never really was interested in investigating this, but I was under the impression that Congress had all this power.
Ugh,
and that...
No.
And so from my situation...
We were under that impression, too. Imagine, imagine the collective shock.
Right, and so what I really learned from the whole thing is, you can explain things to Congress, and they can hold hearings, and they can tell everybody about them, and maybe discuss solutions with the administration, but there isn't any Congress person that actually has any type of power, at least the way that I understand it, to fire any person at any of these agencies.
Nope.
So I feel like if the person in charge of a large agency, isn't... If accountability is not their main focus, no matter how many hearings we have or what we try to do or how many newspaper articles are out there, it's up to the person that runs the agency to actually take the action. And I had no idea.
I didn't really understand that as fully as when I ran up against the brick wall of the VA. And I realized, the separation of powers is a good thing. You really, on the flip side, you really wouldn't want members of Congress to be able to hire and fire people inside the executive branch that are part of these agencies. Could you imagine, the little fiefdoms that would be created or, punishments that would be exacted? You could have just crazy amounts of, corruption. So that would be bad. But
I will say, in from seeing all kinds of different sides of the situation, being directly involved in it, watching it, you know, as a bystander, from having a little bit of legal training before coming to the VA, I also feel bad for the VA secretary, because this person came in and they didn't get to make up performance standards for their managers. They didn't get to say, hey, this is what I expect of you, and if you don't do this, you know, I'm going to have to take action. They had to come in with the hand they were dealt with. So when we see things happening that might look not up to par, this person that's in charge of the VA has to deal with the system in place to, you know, attempt to have some accountability. And if the system that we have in place isn't helping, there's really not much even the VA secretary can do.
Yeah, isn't it isn't a one-person fix. When you get to the federal level, you know, and people think, oh, if the federal government ran, you know, if we just had universal health care. Well, universal health care is just exactly what the VA has. And you look at what happens when it becomes this big and gets off track. The fix is a long way off.
And everyone has to do their part, and yep. There has to be an incentive to do your part. So if Bob McDonald wanted to hold somebody accountable, he has to legally be able to. Or you're just giving that person a free paid vacation. So if the managers at a couple levels under Bob McDonald are not holding people accountable and documenting them when they're doing things that aren't acceptable, there's not very much the VA secretary can do, because we have Douglas factors, and it will always be looked at as someone's first offense. And if you have somebody that has an outstanding rating, I'm just saying hypothetically, for the last 5 years, and they do something wrong, no matter how egregious it is, it's always going to be looked at as their first ding, you know, in their career. So,
which is the part where the public just goes berserk.
Exactly. But those people have rights, too. So you have to think, if people don't do their job, and if there's a whole bunch of EEO decisions or monies paid out to employees out of a certain office, but the people in charge are still getting high ratings, there's really not too much the secretary can do about that.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think they get a bad rap because whoever's in charge, you know?
I think they do, yeah. Too. And I'm looking forward to a change, and maybe we'll have a little bit more cooperation between the executive and the legislative branch, and we can help you guys do a better job. But thank you so much for all your hard work on MyVA, and tell the folks on your team thanks a lot, because I know it's going to really make big changes whether people have seen it yet or not. Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you.
Have an awesome day, and folks, we'll be back with you next week. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.